We're back on Canuck Central. We are for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. And we're going to get to the mailbag coming up after 5 o'clock. But we want to bring in our next guest. This analyst brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. It's Yannick Hansen. Thanks for this, Yannick. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. A little better now after that game the other night. I put a little more faith in it. Now you have two balls here to see if you can get it done, and it's a lot better than having to go into Edmonton and pull out a win.
Yeah, well now, it might take two McDavid Herculean efforts to knock out the Canucks in a row here. And you know what? Like, he looks fatigued, which we'll get to. But I want to start because we talked about it on the pregame. Like, did we think the Canucks had this kind of performance in them? And they showed it a little bit in game one, and then from the second period on last night, it kind of felt like there was only one team on the ice, and that was the team in blue.
Yeah, that was the game we were looking for, the game that where they earned it, deserved it, proved it, did everything we've been looking for, and got the result as well. So that's what I mean, that's where the confidence comes from, because when you can do that, you're hoping that they can do that one more time. And then they don't need spectacular stuff from a goaltender or an individual player. Then you just need your team to go out and perform like that, and it should take care of itself.
Well, as far as, we talk so much about Elias Pettersson, of course, right? And he's been a big topic of conversation. The coach mentioned he was proud of his performance last night. What did you think of the way Pettersson played, especially with Lindholm and Höglander last night?
Yeah, it seems like he had twice the amount of shots in the last game as he did in the previous five, so it was obviously good. He was involved, physical as well. I'm sure we'll touch on that penalty at some point, but again, he was there. A little bit more engaged, looking like he was the puck was following him instead of a magnet where it keeps pushing away from him, so it was good to see that it kind of followed him around a little bit more than it had. It still leaves a lot to be wanted from him. There are still things in his game that you're like, oh, that's not what he would normally do. But again, it was a small step in the right direction, no question about that.
Okay, you mentioned the penalty for charging. I asked a couple of guys last night if they'd ever seen anything like it. They all said no. So have you ever seen a charging penalty like that?
No, and again, I don't know the rules, and apparently there are some rules that if you jump, it's a charge.
Yeah.
Whether that counts when you're standing still, apparently it does. But no, it's a reverse hit. I've never seen it out guy in his head. It was all back, and it didn't look like Fogel was expecting it. So it was, again, odd to say the least. I've never seen anything like it either. And again, it's too bad when it was him, because again, it's one of the things he does. When he does things well, he draws guys in and he puts them on their back like that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we haven't seen him quite a jump like that. It was a significant jump, so don't get me wrong. But it is part of his game. So again, it was good to see. Thankfully, no goal was scored on that power play. That would have probably been heartbreaking. But again, it means he's engaged. He's not shying away from contact.
And that's the thing. I think we all wanted to see him be more engaged. And one of the things that Canucks have done such a good job of in this series is be physical. They've significantly out-hit the Edmonton Oilers. We know they spent a lot of time, or they've leaned heavily on guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl already this series. It seemed like that stuff's paying off in a bad way for Edmonton. Are you kind of starting to see that, the wear and tear on Edmonton a little bit, the fatigue on their top guys? You're heading to game six now. Was that a bit more evident late in the game last night?
I don't know. I don't think so, to be honest. Like I said, I think we touched on this. I've heard rumors of his stamina, whatever you say, his ability to come out and bounce back shift after shift, even though you're double shifting him. I don't think you'll win because he's fatigued. I think you will win because you will beat the other part of the lineup. You will win when your depth takes over. And again, JT, that goal they scored at the end there with Draisaitl and McDavid on the ice, that's just cream on top. But again, you have to find a way to use your depth. Last night was the first time where you saw the Vancouver roll lines. Like, you saw the fourth line. You saw Pod Colson. You saw it, Amon, and those guys as well. Of course, you saw the other guy. But it was noticeable that they had shift. They had offensive zone shift. They had Pod Colson finishing checks. They had offense from Garland. They had offense from Lindholm. So it came from all sorts last night, which in previous games you've been relying on a little bit too few guys. So that's where it comes in, that Vancouver's depth kind of took over a little bit maybe, and that's probably what tilted the ice. In terms of the top line there, McDavid and Draisaitl, I think you still have to be worried about them here come game six, to see what they're going to put on, and then see if you can match it.
Yeah, and, you know, McDavid still had a pretty clear chance late in the third there. You know, it was statistically one of his toughest games in his playoff career. But I think it shows up more, Yannick, in when they have to defend. Like, Draisaitl was on the ice for all three Canucks goals last night. And I'm not saying they're his fault, but, you know, I think there's something to that where, you know, you got to work hard to defend. And when you're chasing a little bit, as the Oilers were more last night, that's maybe where the fatigue showed up more than anything else.
Yeah, there's no, it's harder to defend. Defend is hard. Like, it's tough minutes. It's sour minutes, so to speak, because you're not getting rewarded from it. Where when you're cycling in the offensive zone, it's easier to take another shift, another cycle, a couple extra 20 cents, seconds here. But when you're chasing and you're blocking and you're boxing and you're fighting, those are tough minutes, and then they will wear on you. So again, maybe more so the fact that Vancouver made them play 200 feet the high 29 minutes that they played last night, where the first couple of games they played, it was a little easier for them because, like I said, they're almost half ice when Edmonton was that much on the offense. So the minutes became a little easier for them versus last night, where they were back and forth defending, blocking shots, getting scored on. It's hard. It's hard going end to end. There's no question about that.
Well, you know, and JT Miller was a hero last night, and, you know, he's been absolutely dynamite this entire playoffs for the team. But defensively, he's been all over McDavid this entire series. And, of course, McDavid still gets his looks, but is he doing as good a job as you can possibly do on Connor McDavid?
I think so. I think the fact that you have managed to almost eliminate him in two of the games speaks to the quality Vancouver has. And again, you're mentioning JT, that this isn't a one-man job. It's whenever he's on the ice, five guys have to be aware of this. They have to be you play different. You play different when a guy like that is on the ice. You make sure that that you always have higher guys. You're not cheating. You sit back with your third forward, so he has to come through a forward first and then the D, so you're not exposing your D's, because when that has happened, whether it's by mistake or by fluke, he's blown by, created chances or scored goals. So again, it's center on center is a key part of it. But I think the D pairings who've been matched up against him, and the wingers' awareness of, hey, our shift right now is against McDavid. We're maybe defending more than we go on offense this shift.
Throughout our hits with you as an analyst, you know, we've talked quite a bit about Tyler Myers, and maybe more not in a positive context, but, you know, he has been unbelievable in these playoffs. Last night, he's on the ice for all three goals. He led the Canucks in five-on-five ice time. I know Nikita Zadorov is getting a lot of love, and he's deserved it, but I think Myers has played his shutdown role almost perfectly to this point.
Yeah, because you're not expecting him to go out and score and produce like he did when he was called a trophy. You're expecting him to go out and be physical, good first pass, clear in front of the net, and he's doing that to a T. And he's not trying to do too much, which in the regular season sometimes players can get penalized a little bit on that, because, hey, if the regular season, I gotta produce a little bit right now, where right now his role is clear cut. Like, they're getting a lot of minutes, him and Susie or whoever it is, against McDavid, and you're not supposed to score. They did the other night, but you contain them and we win the game, and they've been doing that really well. So it's great to see. it's great to see guys that have been a little bit under the thumb from the Vancouver faithful throughout the years, playing really well and getting recognized for it. And again, it turns into team success. So it's great to see.
Well, and, you know, it's been the overall team effort with how this Canucks team has played. And last night was an overall strong team game. Now, going into game six in Edmonton, it's not going to be easy, obviously, especially with Edmonton fighting elimination. What's the mindset have to be when you're trying to put a team like Edmonton away, especially when they're on home ice tomorrow?
Keep it close. That's all you can really ask for. Those two games in Edmonton, those are almost textbook. You come right down to the wire, one shot, next goal kind of thing, win the game. That's really all you can ask for, because at that point, luck comes in, chance comes in, and all these things. And when you have an extra match point, you don't mind taking your chances like that. So you wanna keep it close. You wanna hang in there. You don't want Edmonton to get an easy game and say, okay, yeah, we're on the brink here, and it's an elimination game, but we're up by 3 or 4 in the first period, so we weren't really stressed or worried about it after those first couple of goals. Make them squeeze the stick. Make them worried about making that next mistake that might cost them their season. That's sometimes your best bet as to squeeze out these elimination games, because we have seen in the playoffs here that it has been hard. I think the teams on the brink are 5-1, if I'm not mistaken here. The first one here was Rangers, who finally did it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they found a way to hang in there, win these games, because teams are desperate. And when you're desperate, you tend to try a little harder, work a little harder in order to get the job done. And sometimes it's like, we got to match in and saying all these things, but it's easier said than done.
Well, and we saw, you know, the Canucks fail in their first try to knock out Nashville in the first round. And look, I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl are going to give you their best punch here in this game six. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at you, and you know it's coming. It's just, it's really hard to match that level of desperation, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You survive. You survive the beginning, the start of the game, first 5-10 minutes. Then you get into it, and again, keep it close, keep it tight. Of course, if you start scoring, that's great. But in all likelihood, you keep it as close as you can. Don't get blown out. Don't make this easy. Going back to 11, those games 4, 5. I don't think it was until game 6 against Chicago we played a close game against them, that overtime win they had. And it was one of those things. If we keep those games close, You might close it out. Instead, Chicago felt good about themselves, got up and got some easy games in on them, and they got those wins before it really started turning into some tight checking again.
You know, you mentioned one goal games. I think outside of one game against Nashville, the loss, one of the losses they had against Nashville, every single game has been a one goal game for the Canucks in these playoffs, and they've had a lot of success doing it. But just how stressful is it to have to play in those tight games as often as the Canucks have?
You know what? You get used to it and get comfortable doing it too. Because right now you have that belief, the trust that, hey, our goalie will make that save unless it's a fluke play, and then our offense will come through eventually. So again, it is, like, it's nice to blow out teams in the playoff. It just doesn't happen very often. And again, a win is a win, but more than often you're seeing these tight checking games, and getting them in under your belt, having success in them, means that you're approaching them a little bit different, or you're not scared about playing an overtime or late in the third, because, well, this is how we've been playing all the time anyway. So it's, again, it speaks also credit to Vancouver, because it's one of the big holes and big flaws they've had in the past, that they couldn't win one goal games. They couldn't win these tight games, where now they're thriving in them. So it's a lot of plus for, again, the coaching staff and the way this team has come around.
Well, and listen, like, none of us know exactly what's going to happen. Still, you still have to win one more game. But one of the things that keeps standing out to me, and I just want to get your thoughts as a former player too, you're right. The Canucks, obviously, they're comfortable playing these close games. They won these close games. And they're also finding ways to win games. You know, like whether it's tonight, the last night, they scored the game-winning goal in the last few seconds. And they came down from 3 goals down, obviously, in the first game of the series. Remember some of the comebacks they had and how the games went against Nashville, too, in the first round. When things kind of go that way, do you start feeling like, hey, like things are really going our way? Not to say you feel like you're a team of destiny, but do you start getting this feeling of like, you know what, like things are going our way. We're working hard, we're playing well, and we're getting the bounces.
Yeah, sometimes that can turn into that feeling like you feel like you're unbeatable. And you always talk about it when these teams are on these streaks and you hear it from the players in their interviews that it doesn't feel like you can lose no matter what, because you've found a way to overcome so many different things. And that's the confidence. And again, confidence is a funny thing. You can't measure it. You can't figure out where it is, where it's going to go. But when you have it, you're a better player. When you don't, a lot of tough nights. So it's, again, it's one way to kind of fill that bucket, because we're going to go out and play a game tomorrow against Edmonton, and we don't know what it has in store for us. Are they going to come out flying? We're going to be down 3. Is it going to be 0-0 going into the third? We don't know, but it doesn't matter because we've played all of these games. We found a way to win all of these games. So whatever they throw at us, wherever the game turns out to be, we're comfortable in our own skin, so to speak.
What does it say that Rick Tocchet, anytime he's been critical in the media or called out his team a little bit, seems to get the desired response immediately thereafter?
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing that behind closed doors. He doesn't strike me as one that used the media as a way to get through to players. Again, they respond very, very well to him. Everything he's done from Game 3 in Philly, when he called them out for being, I think it was soft,
yeah,
which you probably the worst thing you can say. And we were talking about, oh, he's pushing this button already. But he's got a finger on the pulse. He knows exactly where to push them, what to do when they aren't doing what he likes. And then he gets, case in point, what we got last night out of them. So it's, again, that's a coach that knows his team and hasn't worn on them yet either.
I mean, we've seen this in the past too, like coaches after a while, you know, that message, you know, stops going through. But it seems like obviously they have a good coaching staff, but sometimes you have a staff, it seems like, where they have different guys that can relate to different players, and it seems like they've had those bases covered. Like, what was the best staff that you were a part of as a coaching staff that you felt like, okay, like here are guys that we can get along with, but also guys we respect and they know what they're doing?
Obviously, when you have success, that makes it a lot easier. But again, when I came up and we had AV, Newell Brown, Bones, and those guys, they were touching a lot of different buttons and a lot of different roles. So Newell was always joking around with you and making sure you felt good about yourself and chit-chatting. And again, Bones was a different way of communicating and obviously more in tune with the D's. So you were getting a lot of different messages. So it wasn't always the same guy who was barking at you or kind of patting you on the shoulders. So it seemed like it lasted so long, and I don't think that the message got stale at any point. Obviously, us getting swept by San Jose probably played into why they got let go, but we were it was a really, really great coaching staff we had back then because there were so many different voices, respected and knowledgeable and all these things. And you could give and take from both of them, so, or all of them, if you will. So it wasn't like there was always the boogeyman and always the good cop kind of thing. And that made it that it, like I say, you're never, oh, this guy's coming in and then doing this again at us. No, you were, oh, okay, what's coming at us today kind of thing.
Before we let you go, I think Phil DiGiuseppe with his goal last night confirmed the baby legs are real.
Yeah, it must have been just what you needed to. It's great to see. And again, I didn't know that either, but I guess it just makes the story that much better. Again, such a big goal. And again, from a player, you don't expect it. So it's, and then the story behind it, that's what legends are made of.
Yannick, we always appreciate it. We'll see if there's more legends to be made with the rest of the series. Thanks for this.
Yeah, sounds good. Take care, guys.
There is Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canuck Central, and you know why McDavid didn't look quite as fast last night? It's because DiGiuseppe had the baby legs, and he was just easily the fastest player on the ice.
Bro, I mean, there are so many shifts. Like, I turn around, like, who's that? Like, he skated so fast. I don't know if we'll ever see him skate any faster than he did yesterday, right? Like, we were only half kidding about the baby bump thing, but we're like, no, it's a real thing. Like, it seems like every time a player has a kid, the next day, like, they have extra jump, they have extra juice, and boy, did he have the extra juice last night.
Yeah, it was special, and that fourth line really gave the Canucks something. I mean, you know, you wondered if Mikheyev and Lafferty might get a look back in the lineup. I know Mikheyev may be dealing with an injury, as Murph reported yesterday. But with the way that they played last night, it's hard to imagine Rick Tocchet makes any changes going into tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't make any changes. Like, what change, like, on the back end, you're probably not doing anything, right? Up front,
the only one would be Ian Cole, that I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering about, and maybe even asking about in the mailbag.
Yeah, I'm sure his name will come up, but so the first Edmonton goal, he doesn't get the puck out, right, the first time. Then PDG gets the puck out, he gets to the red line. They change the forwards, so the D pair stays out. He gets, obviously, he's a bit tired, so you can blame it a little bit on him, right? He kind of loses track of the guys a bit. You can tell his legs are heavy. He was on the PK before, he'd been on for like over 3 minutes in the first 4 or 5 minutes of that first period. So clearly, like, he wasn't as sharp as he needed to be. But outside of that, I thought he was fine. I just don't know if he's done enough for the coach to take him out of the lineup. Whether fans or media want it, it's a different conversation. I just don't know if I saw enough for the coach to be like, we have to make that switch on the back end.
Still played a big role on the PK last night, which was obviously very successful as well. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. The mailbag is coming up next on Canuck Central.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and don't miss an episode.